Hello and welcome back to the Go Home Show podcast. I'm Michael Henson, and as ever, I'm joined by Chris Anderson, and this is our review of NXT Halloween Havoc and AEW Dynamite for Wednesday, the 28th of October. There was a lot of action, so let's get into it. We start with Halloween Havoc, the first Halloween Havoc in 20 years. The set looks great. There's a graveyard. There's a stage for spin the wheel, make a deal. We get a giant pumpkin. Everyone wanted the giant pumpkin on Twitter from what I saw before it's bed last night. So we've got the giant pumpkin. And we start with Damian Priest against Johnny Gargano for the NXT North American Championship. Damian Priest gets a live entrance. Really cool. Go check that out. I'll make sure it goes out on at Go Home Show Pod on Twitter. So go check that out. Gargano comes out and slits the giant pumpkin to deflate it. Heel move from Gargano. Johnny Gargano is a nasty man. We spin the wheel, we make the deal, and it is a Devil's Playground match, which means there's no disqualification, no count-outs, and falls count anywhere. Damian Priest starts on top, gets a spinning heel kick into a two count. We go to the outside, and Priest gets sent into the steps by Gargano. Gargano then goes to the other side of the ring, pulls out a kendo stick, starts smiling to himself. As he goes back around, Priest gets a nightstick for himself. During a picture-in-picture, which I find very confusing because we don't really get it over here, but Damian Priest grabbed the steps, and if you played the old 2K games, you remember where you get the steps, press X in the ring, and it sort of just slams it into the face of the opponent. He did that on the outside. During that, we also get him going up to the ramp. He gets thrown into the deflated pumpkin and kicked about, gets a two count. After the break, Gargano gets back on top before Priest gets a two count with a sit-down chokeslam. We get a bit more back and forth, but Priest hits a Falcon Arrow onto the announce table. We then fight into the backstage area, and Gargano is using anything he can to get an advantage. He gets spooked by a prop, which was quite funny. But then the weapons he uses, like a fire extinguisher, like a plastic trash can. He pushes like a cart into Priest, gets a two count. We get a Gargano submission, but Priest fights out and chucks Gargano into a barricade. We then battle to the stage where the wheel was set up, where Shots of Blackout was hosting. Priest goes for his finisher. It's countered into a super kick. And then Gargano gets a metal trash can, attacks him with it. Then we get a bit of drama. We love some drama. Someone, don't know who, in a screen mask comes out and hits Damian Priest with a steel pipe. And then pass Johnny Gargano a tombstone. He smashes it over the head of Priest, knocks him off the stage. Crawls down, gets the pin. We have a new North American champion, the first ever two-time North American champion. Chris, what do you make of the title change?
I was not ready for this. I thought Damian Priest was going to get a long reign, and evidently not. However, it'd be quite interesting to see who the person in the screen mask is. I'm excited for that reveal. I assume that's where the feud will lead into for Damian Priest. The idea of Johnny Gargano and the Gargano family, I guess, holding some gold makes sense to me. I think it's one of those, when you have that kind of numbers advantage frequently, you need to be winning stuff. Otherwise, you all look like idiots. So it's surprising it came this soon. I thought it'd be Candice LeRae that won gold over Johnny Gargano, certainly in the short term. Maybe Johnny wins it again later. But I think all in all, this makes sense. And I'm very intrigued to see where they go with it next.
I've got my own theory about the personal mask, which we'll come on to later. Next up is the costume contest we're all waiting for. And it is Vic Joseph versus Wade Barrett on commentary. Vic Joseph is dressed up as Waldo, says Wade isn't dressed up, and Wade says he's got some bad news as he's Bad News Barrett, and Vic has lost the costume contest. I popped for that moment personally. I don't know what everyone else did, but I thought that was brilliant. We then get Pat McAfee and One Lorcan and Danny Burch out to explain why they did what they did last week against Fandango. Pat McAfee said he paid Ridge Holland to attack Adam Cole. He gave him the Mercedes, and then he fractured his leg into 700 pieces. Unfortunate injury for Ridge Holland there. But he said after the injury, he knew he had the right guys to take over NXT. I think the line he used was, the guy got injured, so I used the guy who injured my guy. Very confusing, but anyway, you get the point. Kyle O'Reilly comes out as he's about to get the ring. Music hits. The returning Pete Dunne. We saw him in NXT UK in a tag team match. He is now returned to NXT, and he's out with two chairs and what looks like some fresh Yeezys. He looks like he's going to support Kyle O'Reilly. Kyle O'Reilly drops his chair and Pete Dunne whacks him in the back. A throwback to NXT TakeOver New Orleans, where Roderick Strong turned on Dunne to join Undisputed Era as Pete Dunne was pinning Kyle O'Reilly. The heels then beat down Kyle O'Reilly, and Pat McAfee says, we're the new kings of this brand, and that's undisputed. And to me, it was like setting this up for War Games Undisputed Era versus Pat McAfee's group. Really like the angle, though, and looking forward to see where it goes. Backstage, Cameron Grimes is freaking out. He says he's going to take a loss instead of having the match. He asks William Regal to join him, which obviously declined. He goes outside, a white van pulls up, and out come Michael Hayes in a bright orange tracksuit as Bad Street USA plays on the speaker. Grimes is properly confused by it all, said he hates rednecks, and enters the van. Back in the ring, Jake Atlas is already there. He's having a match with Santos Escobar, who, with his ring gear, is paying tribute to Rey Mysterio, which I believe is a throwback to Halloween Havoc 1997 when he faced Eddie Guerrero. Really nice tribute, though. It's a fairly short match with Jake Atlas at a disadvantage against Legado del Fantasma. Obviously, Joaquin Wilde and Raul Mendoza on the outside, they do get involved. There was a cartwheel DDT from the top rope. Looks like it's going to get a three count, but then one of Legado del Fantasma puts Escobar's leg on the rope. Atlas then takes Mendoza and Wilde out before Mendoza headbutts him with a Lucha Libre mask on into the ring, and Escobar hits a Phantom Driver to get the win. A fairly short match, but as Chris mentioned a couple of weeks ago, maybe last week, you know the result, but you sort of don't know how they're going to do it. But I thought this is good and shows Legado del Fantasma to be the strong faction within NXT. We then get the Haunted House of Terrors match. This is no ordinary match. This is a cinematic wrestling match. We get Grimes shouting out, trying to find Dexter Lumis as a Marilyn Manson theme plays in the background. He gets scared by a deer head on a wall and the tricycle ran on its own. A referee's like facing the corner and he like tries to get his attention. He turns around and scares Grimes by doing this weird face thing into the camera. Lumis then appears and chokes Grimes up against the wall. Grimes fights back, throws Lumis into a mirror and holds the door locked to stop him getting out. Lumis breaks down the door, so Grimes goes into another one, and he sees his silhouette in the shower, and he's like, oh, I didn't realise Dexter Lumis had a sister, I'm a little bit grimy. So he tries to get in the shower, but then there's this possessed zombie girl behind the shower curtain. Very freaky moment, I must say. Don't watch that late at night with the lights off, that's all I'll say on that matter. Grimes runs out. Lumis gets him with a sleeper, but then this two-headed zombie appears. They fight through the haunted house of terror. Dexter Grimes goes to hit Lumis with some weapons. Two more zombies appear and attack Grimes. One gets on his back. He like takes him outside and like chucks him onto the road. Then he turns around. All these zombies are closing on him. So he gets back in the van. As he looks to his left to see the driver, it's Dexter Lumis. So he gets out, runs off to be continued, which he does get continued later in the match. Chris, what are your thoughts on using a cinematic wrestling match for this?
So I'm very torn on cinematic matches just because I think they can take away from what is meant to be like, a sports entertainment idea. But I think when you're doing Halloween Havoc and you've got this ability to have a bit of nonsense in there, it works really well. I think Cameron Grimes is a really good character to do it with because he is so big and over the top that he can kind of really pull it along. And then when you have Dexter Lumis, who is almost kind of the exact opposite again, he's very stoic, but almost in a creepy way. I think it works really, really well. I enjoyed this whole thing. I thought it was good fun. And I think Halloween Havoc's the right place to do it in.
Yeah, I agree. Like, having the cinematic wrestling match added a little bit extra into Halloween Havoc. Very good. Next up, Rhea Ripley versus Raquel Gonzalez. Obviously, this feud's been building for quite a few months now. Back and forth early on, showcasing each other's power. Like, a lot of elbow strikes, a lot of slaps. Rhea Ripley hits a dropkick, sends Gonzalez to the outside. Goes for a cannonball from the apron. Gonzalez's power is so much, he catches Rhea Ripley and then powerbombs her in sort of like the glass panel barricades that's keeping the audience safe from all the wrestlers. She continues to wear Ripley down during an advert before Ripley mounts a comeback. A few near falls from Gonzalez, including a belly-to-belly from the top rope. Ripley reverses out with a one-arm powerbomb with a head scissors takedown into the turnbuckle, shits a big boot and a riptide and seals the win for Rhea Ripley. Very short match, but did what it did. Showed Raquel Gonzalez's power, but also keeps Ripley looking strong. After the match, it shows Cameron Grimes running down the road with the promise of what happens next. Backstage, Drake Maverick is dressed up as Hulk Hogan, and Killian Dane is dressed up as the Shockmaster. Maverick saying that you're not a proper Shockmaster and then falls over himself. Nice little comedy segment, and good to see mine and Chris's favourite tag team, After Synergy, featuring on the show. We then get the conclusion of the Haunted House of Terrors match. Grimes arrives at the arena and zombies start crawling towards him from the graveyard, so he's forced into the ring. The ring starts to fill up with smoke and Dexter Lumis appears, who hits clotheslines and into a bulldog, then a spinebuster. We get sort of like a mini comeback from Grimes, I think it's like a stomp, before one of them creepy zombie girls which are going to haunt me for a long time, sort of climb around Dexter Lumis's body, get on his shoulders and hit a crossbody onto Grimes, and then he's put to sleep after a kata gatan into the silence for the win as the zombies sort of crawl around the ring before Lumis exits. No words to sum up the zombies, but yeah, decent overall in my opinion. Tommaso Ciampa cuts a promo on NXT saying there's too much social media complaining, not fighting enough, and he sets up a match with Dream next week. We then get into the main event, and boy, this was a good main event. Poppy does a performance for Io Shirai, another live performance, very good. Spin the Wheel, Make the Deal reveals it'll be a tables, ladders and scares match. It's a fast start. Io Shirai hits a crossbody to take out Lorray on the outside. Lorray finds a bag under the ring, empties it, thinks it's got to be weapons, and it's full of prop body parts. She freaks out before Io Shirai hits her one of the prop arms. We go down to the announce table, we've both stood on that, and Candice hits Shirai with a laptop before setting up a ladder from the ring to the table, which ultimately is Lorray's downfall later in the match. We then get Shirai yeeting a chair at Candice Lorray before hitting a meteor onto the steel steps. Returning from another picture-in-picture ad break, Candice is on top with two tables set up to the outside. They get back into the ring, start trying to set up ladders to retrieve the championship. Shirai misses a moonsault and lands leg first on a steel chair. Lorray takes advantage, hits a few chair shots to the back of Shirai before Io Shirai hits a comeback, gets a suplex onto steel chair. She goes for a double knees into the corner, misses, and then the ladder that Lorray was propped up on falls on that injured leg. We get two chairs set up. Shirai goes to the top rope, attempts a suplex, but is countered. She then traps Lorray's ankle in a chair and sort of snaps it down in an attempt to break it, pretty much. Goes to the 619, but Lorray ducks it and attacks Shirai with a chair. We then get a swinging neck breaker through a pair of tables on the outside. Really nice spot. The person in the ghost mask is back from earlier on. She gets Lorray into the ring, hoists her up on the shoulders, puts her on top of a ladder before hosting the night. Shotzi Blackheart stops her and hits her with the electric chair onto the chairs. Candice LeRae still at the top of the ladder. She realises where she is, but Shirai manages to recover, climb up the ladder of her own. There's a bit of back and forth. Shirai gets knocked down before pushing LeRae's ladder out of the ring. LeRae goes through the ladder on the outside, which she'd set up earlier. A huge bump, massive spot, looked very painful before Io Shirai pulled down the title for the victory. Quickly summing this up in my top three moments. Third moment being Zombie Editions in Haunted House of Horrors match. Fox is really good and played into the cinematic wrestling match. The second one being Pete Dunne's return. I am really looking forward to seeing him, what he can do in this new group with Pat McAfee. He's also a heel now, which Pete plays so good over here. And the third one is the ladder spot I just mentioned between Io Shirai and Candice LeRae. Very, very good. Go check it out. And that is my one match to watch for the night. A great main event. I'm glad Io Shirai has got the title, but Candice LeRae put in a very good challenge. And yeah, go check it out. Very good match. Chris, over to you for AEW.
And now it is time for the AEW review. We start off with the semi-final of the number one contenders tournament for the men's heavyweight title. It is Wardlow versus Hangman Adam Page. This is a very simple story, but very well done. It's just big guy versus, I'm not going to say little guy, but perhaps not so big guy. What I found very interesting is they never used any rest holds or anything like this during the match, which when you have a big guy in the ring is a good effort. The story basically was Page would pick up momentum. Wardlow would cut him off with one big strike. Early on, we see Wardlow spear Hangman Page through the barriers, through the crowd barriers, which I will always enjoy. Always enjoy that spot. It worked really well. The finish was an exploded suplex off the top from Page, followed by not one, but two buckshot lariats. This was a very, very good match. It was a good opener. I've said recently in a number of episodes that what AEW does really well is they're very good at starting the show off well. They put a good match on to start off with. It's not one that's going to steal the show, but it is also one that kind of sets the tone for the whole show. This was another good example of that. Wardlow, for someone who came in so green, obviously he is still, in terms of experience, very, very new to wrestling, is improving steadily. He's getting better and better every time we see him. I was actually surprised they put Adam Page into the final. I thought we'd see either the Bucks or Omega would cost him. Just a throwback to how Hangman Adam Page cost the Bucks in the tag team tournament. However, we do get Hangman Page into the final. I like this. This was good start. Match two was Eddie Kingston versus Matt Sydal, the artist formerly known as Evan Bourne. This match wasn't the best match, but I think it was very hamstrung by the fact that a lot of it was in picture-in-picture. And essentially what they need to do is get Eddie Kingston over strong, because obviously he's going to the title match at Full Gear. But the fact that they had then 5 minutes of adverts throughout, it stretched the match out more than you would hope for. And obviously, when you come back from adverts, you can't just instantly go into the finish. There needs to be a bit of back and forth to build something out of it. So that was probably the biggest issue with it. There was a very cool spot after the break when they came back, where Matt Sydal hit a top rope hurricanrana to Eddie Kingston, but he did it from jumping from the floor. So he literally sprung from the floor all the way above the top rope, runners Eddie Kingston off the top, and then hit everyone's favorite move at the moment. Shout out to Sasha Banks, a top rope meteora onto Eddie Kingston for a near fall. This is a very, very good spot. Like I said, it came after the break. We all knew what the result was going to be, but this did just enough to make you think, oh, this could be it. The finish was actually very, very good. This is really good storytelling. Eddie Kingston slapped on the Bulldog Choke, which is obviously John Moxley's submission finisher at the moment. Sydal quickly tapped out, but Kingston didn't release, and Sydal went to sleep, obviously throwing back to how Eddie Kingston was put to sleep against John Moxley 3-4 weeks ago in a title match. Good finish. Like I said, the match probably just went on 3 or 4 minutes too long, but when you have to chuck in a 5-minute ad break, I kind of understand why it did. I enjoyed it a lot. Now, this led to the bit which I'm struggling with the storyline a little bit, which is a shame because the matchup itself is so exciting. So we have an interview with the Young Bucks and FTR. FTR is joined by Tully, obviously their manager. The Bucks, who have been super kicking everyone in recent weeks, and not just wrestlers. I mean, like Tony Schiavone, referees, anyone who you would see as natural face talent within the show. The Young Bucks have been super kicking. Super kick, super kick, super kick. And they nonchalantly pay their fines. $5,000, $10,000, throwaway money. We're not asked. Suddenly their position just faces. Because obviously they're going against FTR, who are the big heel tag team. So I can understand that. They talk about Matt's ankle injury and how they, you know, they understand this will hamper them, but Matt will fight through the pain. The Bucks talk about how they don't like their new attitude of kind of super kicking everyone, but they also need to find their edge back. So they're being positioned as faces in this match, despite being probably the most despicable heels on the show for quite a while now. It's a bit convoluted. I feel like it's not putting the match in a position to succeed. And for this match to really work at Full Gear, it needs to be match of the night. Now, I'm not saying these guys can't do it, but they've got to really pull something out of the bag. Halfway through the interview, FTR walked out because they weren't being asked enough questions. Clearly, they weren't needed for the interview. And the Bucks close out the interview saying that if they don't win the tag titles at Full Gear, they'll never challenge for them again. Again, that really positions them as baby faces because they're in this, they've got everything to lose situation. It also harks back to Cody, who did a similar thing with the heavyweight title probably about 6 months ago now. Like I said, I'm excited for the match. It feels like it's not been put in a position to succeed, but I'm interested to see where they go. Now, for perhaps the most hotly anticipated segment of the show, after last week's dinner debonair between MJF and Chris Jericho, we have the town hall meeting where the Inner Circle will decide whether or not MJF will be allowed to join. We have various talents from the AEW roster asking questions about why MJF should be allowed to join. There's a very funny moment where Britt Baker essentially recreated the Trump question from one of his rallies, where a lady said that Trump was so handsome, especially when he smiles. I thought that was good fun. I quite enjoyed that. Eric Bischoff turned up to ask 3 questions. That came from absolutely nowhere. In my opinion, this was fun, but it suffered from the fact that the last week's segment, the Dinner Debonair, was so wild and random and either hilarious or awful, depending on what side of that line you sit on, that this was a bit vanilla in comparison. It probably went on a couple of minutes too long. It ended with Jericho challenging MJF to a match at Full Gear. If MJF wins, he's in the Inner Circle. Sammy and Ortiz take issue with this, and they will face MJF and Wardlow in a tag match next week. Sammy and Ortiz get ready to do the job because they're building MJF, and you are going to be on your backs for 3 seconds coming out of that match. Next up, it is time for the TNT Championship Lumberjack match between Cody Rhodes and Orange Cassidy. These two put on an absolute heater of a match 2 weeks ago, ended in a time limit draw where if the match had been 1 second longer, Orange Cassidy would have won the belt. This was announced as a lumberjack match because Dark Order vowed they'd interrupt and cost the OC the match. So management just said, well, we'll have everyone around the ring then, which I guess makes sense. early on, very, very good start. Orange goes for the orange punch. Cody dodges. Cody Rhodes goes for the crossroads. Orange Cassidy dodges. He then goes for the mousetrap. Cody escapes. Very back and forth. Very quick. Likes it a lot. Orange Cassidy then did his thing where he pretended to put his hands in his pocket, but then did a headlock takeover into actual real wrestling from Orange Cassidy. He is trying. I enjoyed this a lot. An early moment that was actually important. I didn't really cluck it straight away, but it was important. Cody Rhodes hit a stalling suplex and then did a bunch of push-ups next to him, which is a thing he's done for a while. Arn Anderson, Cody's manager, is beside himself, telling Cody to get serious. We have some cool moments with the Lumberjacks throughout the match. At one point, Orange Cassidy takes a punch from the apron, falls into the arms of Chuck and Trent, best friends, who lift him back into the ring. 10 seconds later, Cody takes a shot from the apron, falls into the arms of Chuck and Trent, who just drop him to the floor. That worked nicely. It gave the Lumberjacks a reason to be there. We come back from commercials. And of course, you can't put all this talent around the ring and not expect fisticuffs. We are brawling. Cody superplexes Orange Cassidy from the top rope to the outside onto all the Lumberjacks. I love that spot. It's just always an enjoyable spot. The finish to this match was absolutely wild. So, Orange Cassidy hits a near fall. The Dark Order distracts the ref. John Silver slides into the ring and pump kicks Orange Cassidy. Now, that would be enough, you'd think. But then Arn Anderson, the manager of the face champion, hits Orange Cassidy with his clipboard. Cody Rhodes, who was distracted as well, just turns around, sees Orange Cassidy in trouble, hits the crossroads for the 1-2-3. All hell breaks loose, obviously. After the match, Cody looks a little bit confused as to what has happened. He's obviously going to watch the tape back. I'm interested to see where they're going this with Arn Anderson and Cody Rhodes. Maybe there's a potential split coming there. That'll be good storytelling. Very quickly getting through it, because I will realize I'm going very long here. And I love me some detail. We have Miro and Kip backstage with the best friends. Best friends apologize. Miro and Kip forgive them. It's all fine. Psych, not really. Miro kicks the shit out of them. And that's the end of the scene. They're obviously building this feud up. Next week, we have Miro versus one of the best friends. I think it's Chuck, if I remember rightly. Excited to see Miro in ring action again in a singles match, which hopefully will be a bit easier for him. Obviously, he's had some rust since he's come back. I think just a straight singles match would be good for him. Expect him to go over strong there. Match 4. This is an interesting one for those who like the outside wrestling world. We have a new NWA Women's Champion, Serena Deeb. She won the title literally one day before AEW. She got straight on a plane, flew to Jacksonville to take on legit Layla Hirsch. This was another match where picture-in-picture did not help because it was a fairly short match and it had 5 minutes of ads in the middle of it. Spoke 3 weeks ago, I think, about how good Deeb was in a match she had against Swole. And she essentially led the match and made Swole look incredible throughout it. Deeb is very, very good. I think she's part of the coaching setup at AEW. If not, she should be. I think she's a big part of why the in-ring women's action has got much better recently. Like I said, it didn't help that there's 5 minutes adverts, and it didn't help that there's obviously zero build going into this, but they both showed that they could really work. The finish was Hirsch hits some palm strikes and knee to the face on Deeb, hits a German, goes to the top to hit a moonsault. Deeb moves, locks the head, spinning neck breaker, then another one, and Deeb captures the arm, hooks a leg, very quick tap out. This was a good worked match. This was just a well-worked TV match. I've said it every week, I think, for the last 4 weeks. The women's division needs a big feud. However, if we're going to set that up with Deeb, the NWA Women's Champion, against the winner of Hikaru Shida versus Nyla Rose, which will happen at Full Gear, in a champion versus champion feud to prove who is the best in the world, I'm for that. I think that works really nicely. That's what I'd go with. A rare fifth out of sixth match. Usually we just have 5 matches on AEW. We have 6 today. We have Sean Spears versus VSK. This was the squashiest squash of all squashes. This wasn't even like a surprise attack. VSK literally just walked straight in. Spears picked him up, hit a Death Valley driver. That's it. 1-2-3. After the match, Spears took issues with some heckling from the crowd. He goes and attacks someone in a bull costume, rolls them into the ring. Turn around and it's Scorpio Sky. These two have been feuding quite quietly in the background for quite a while now. They've done bits on AEW Dark. On AEW Dark, Sky, as Spears turns around, Sky hits a TKO and stares down Tully, who is Spears' manager. They're obviously building this out. They're giving it a bit more TV time. I'm interested to see where it goes. I'm always a fan of lower card feuds, because those are guys that need it. So I think this was good. And then lastly, we get into the main event, which should surprise no one. It was an absolute banger. If you put Penta and Kenny Omega in a ring together, they're going to put on a heater. Penta was only in the match because Ray was injured and encouraged a four-hit spot in the semi-final of the AEW number one's contender tournament to his brother, Penta, by Eddie Kingston. Kenny does his intro with all his reviews as he's introed. It works really nicely. The match starts. Kenny's keeping his t-shirt on, which confused the hell out of me, until he reveals he's wearing the AAA mega title that he won from Phoenix himself, who's at ringside. We start off with chop off. Penta hits very hard. Do not get in the way of a Penta chop. Penta took control of the match with a huge tope con hero over the top. When we get back from the break, Kenny hits one of his own. We have some nuts spots in this match. We have a Canadian destroyer to the outside from Penta. He then hits a package pile driver onto Kenny in the ring. Kenny kicks out at two. Penta worked the arm of Kenny to try and stop the one-winged angel. The finish was a huge V-trigger from Kenny into the one-winged angel to set up Hangman Page versus Kenny Omega at Full Gear for the number one contender to the AEW World Championship. Watch this match. I'm gonna mess up the order very quickly. One match to watch, because it's the easiest way to go into it, is this one. This was the best wrestling match, potentially, of the last 7 days, in my opinion. It's dead, dead good. There's huge spots in it. If we didn't have to suffer for picture in picture for 5 minutes, it would have been ridiculous. That was the only thing that took out of it, but it's adverts. We have to live with that stuff. Top three moments for me, Serena Deeb walking in with the NWA title. I always enjoy it. NWA is something that if you're a big wrestling fan who's willing to put in the time to watch more stuff outside of the main shows, check out some old NWA stuff. It's got a lot of heritage. It's really good. My number two moment, Arn Anderson with the shenanigans. If we get to see an Arn Anderson spinebuster to Cody Rhodes to cost him the title, I'm all for that. That's good storytelling. And number one, the AAA title reveal from Kenny Omega. That smug son bitch is back. Kenny is full on cleaner once again. It was really, really good. That is all we have time for today. Thank you so much for listening. Make sure to leave us a review on the podcast if you've enjoyed it. Follow us on Twitter at Go Home Show Pod and check us out on YouTube, Sport Wrestling, for all our interviews. Make sure to check out the main podcast from last week featuring NXT UK's Pretty Deadly, who stopped by for a chat. We discussed the greatest Hell in a Cell match of all time, a closer look at WWE Untold, Mankind vs. Undertaker, and much more. Me and Crush will be back in about 6 hours' time for the main podcast with Will and Elliot. Speaking of Mick Foley, check out our interview with him on all good podcasting apps, as well as our chat with the one, the only, Paul Heyman on his partnership with Roman Reigns and much more. Thanks for listening. Now let's go home.